for the players.
Third time's a charm. I'm Ryan Betson, and this is For The Players, the pop culture's PlayStation podcast. Over 40 years of playing PlayStation and 12 plus years in that games media combined, I want to thank you for joining us in this PlayStation conversation. Now I remember Max parts. This PlayStation conversation usually happens at 8 a.m. on podcast servers, including like Apple's podcast, Spotify, whichever, but also at 9 a.m. On those YouTubes. If you want to join us in future conversations, be sure to head over to our social media. That's Facebook, Discord, Instagram, Twitter, X. All those links can be found in the description below. But if you want to join the conversation as it happens, head over to twitch.tv/thepopculturist. We watch us record this show live, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation pod. And if you are listening to us on podcast services, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you're watching us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, leave a comment below. I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/thepopculturist, as well as our merchandise store, popculturist.com/shop, where you can buy shirts and other assorted shit with our logos on it. I'm by myself today. It's just the Betson show. So Max, sadly, is out of commish. He is unwell, as is his family, like pretty much all the peeps, all the kids. They're out. They're dunskies. They're not doing well. So he's left me in charge to do this all by myself. He has given me a whole string of news and stuff as well, which is exciting. So he has done his job. So big thank you to Max. But yeah, so I guess what you guys are going to get today is about an hour's worth of me just talking nonsense at you. So, you know, it's a bit of hit and miss for those of you playing at home, but let's just get straight into it, all right? So let me talk about what's been happening in this week. So, I am 2 weeks into my new house now. So as you can see, the setup is finally getting there. Those watching on YouTube, did get the LEDs back up. Most of the things are back on the shelves. I haven't filled them all yet. I haven't quite nailed the lighting yet either. This feels like a little dark and a little green tinted, but I'll tinker with that over time because I've changed the whole lighting setup. Previously, I was using two like studio box lights that just faced up on the roof. Or slightly tilted in, so in order to sort of nicely disperse the light across the room, and then with a little LED there for a bit of face. But instead, I've got a Keylight Air Mini that I stole from my good friend Craig, and that one as well. So like, it's a smaller setup. Found the other one had took a bit too much space up. Plus, this room has quite high ceilings, so the idea of bouncing the light off the roof down, not really as doable, but we're getting pretty comfortable in the place. Like this my space is pretty much there, ready to go. Just a couple of boxes. I haven't set up my mini painting station yet, that I'm looking forward to. I need to buy like a new desk for it rather than using up a fold up table. But yeah, outside of that, like, you know, life's just been life. Worked a wrestling show on the weekend, did some ring announcing, that was cool. Other than that, just been doing my regular existing. So let's just get straight into it, right? You know, it's been a while. I don't want to sit here and fluff too much. We'll make a nice, hopefully truncated show if I can. So let's talk about the games that what we have been playing. Not how I normally say it, just feels weird doing it by myself. So a couple of games this week. We'll bury the lead and we'll get the big one out of the way first. So thank you to the team over at Ubisoft Australia. Max and I have been spending some time with Star Wars Outlaws. So as you listen to this, the embargo has dropped. However, I am in no position to fully review the title. Mostly because, yeah, moving house, day job, my kid, you know, all the different life things has put a bit of a inhibiting factor on me getting this game through to credits. So this will certainly be more of a first impressions sort of discussion, and of course only my side, as when Max returns next week, he'll be able to fill in the gaps on his side. So this is the latest release from Massive Entertainment. So Massive are probably best known for their work on Tom Clancy's The Division, which when the Outlaws was first announced, it did catch my attention for that reason. I didn't really like The Division 1, and I'm not quite sure why. It may have just been a time and place thing. But when I dived in at Division 2, I adored that game to no end. Now, I couldn't tell you what happened. Like, I couldn't tell you any of the story beats, mostly because I just had podcast in and I just played it. And it was something about the gameplay that kept me coming back and kept me going and going and going. So coming into Star Wars Outlaws, I'm not going to lie, that was part of what I was wanting to get out of it, I guess, for lack of a better word. Like, I was hoping, give me The Division or as close to The Division in a Star Wars setting, and you're getting thumbs up from me. Sadly, like, it wasn't quite that, and that's okay. Because, you know, that's an expectation that I had bringing into it. So that makes things a little bit different. But let's get some of the main beats down. Now, I am pulling from a doc here just so I make sure I get all the beats after I incorrectly called Jot Pip in our discussion on the Plucky Squire last week. That was an idiot move on my part. So I'm just going to read the game overview just to give you the rundown, and we'll go from there. So in Star Wars Outlaws, experience the first ever open world Star Wars game set between the events of Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars Return of the Jedi. Explore distinct locations across the galaxy, both iconic and new. Risk it all as Kay Vess, an emerging scoundrel seeking freedom and the means to start a new life, as she tries to pull off one of the greatest heists the galaxy has ever seen. Fight, steal, and outwit your way through the galaxy's crime syndicates as you join the most wanted. While the Galactic Empire tightens its grips, the criminal underworld thrives. Kay, along with her companion Nix, must free herself from the bounty that follows her. From the humid jungles of Akiva to the windswept savannah of Tashara, explore sprawling landscapes on your speeder and pilot your starship, the Trailblazer, through the wilds of space. On your journey for freedom, take on risky contracts and convince a cast of outlaws to join along the way. If you are willing to take the risk, the galaxy is full of opportunity. So first, let's touch upon Kay Vess as a character and Nix. So Nix is her little axolotl-looking sidekick. It's kind of like a cat meets Toothless, but smashed into a... axolotl. I know I just said it a second ago, but my brain died. So at the moment where I'm at in the game, I'm about 6 or 7 hours into the game. And my relationship with Kay is interesting. In the beginning, you're given quite a lot of exposition from her as she explains, you know, where she is in the world and how she fits when essentially talking to Nix, talking to a pet. And as someone with a pet cat, I talk to that cat all the time. So, like, that part it's an easy way to get some exposition, and so I'm okay with that. But at the moment, like, I haven't got the hook for her yet. I haven't found the redeeming thing within her as a character. Oh, sorry, not redeeming, endearing thing about her as a character. Like, she's pretty bland in quite a lot of ways. And I understand comparative to, you know, criticisms that we see of, like, the sequel trilogy with the likes of Rey, you know, that was the quote-unquote Mary Sue nonsense, which is in itself bullshit. So I can understand why they've sort of paired her back in a lot of ways, on the presumption that it is a response to that criticism. But it's almost kind of gone a little bit too far in the other way. I mean, that when we meet her, she seems pretty useless, like, for lack of a better term. And she seems as if she is essentially a nuisance to everyone around her. Like, the first major character you consult with. You know, he ends up getting hurt on her behalf, and he delivers a conversation to her essentially along the lines of, "Can you just fuck off? Like, you caused me nothing but pain and annoyance and expense. Fuck off." She's like, "Oh, I'll come back." And he's like, don't. And like, you could read it as like, don't come back, you know, go change your life, go be somewhere else. But the delivery in which it's given, it comes across as please don't fucking come back. Just don't come back. Just go away, please. God damn. And that's a hiccup, right? Because like, if all the characters in the world kind of find her like a bumbling idiot and kind of not intriguing, you're left kind of going, huh? Because in the challenge of all sort of, you know, games, right, you can only go so deep because the player needs to be able to project themselves into the character in some capacity. And if you create too many restrictions around the character, you may not get the things that you need to want to play it. And, you know, make your choices instead. You're making the choices the character would make. And in an open world RPG sort of setting, and what we're dealing with here in Outlaws, that would be a disadvantage to the game in itself. So, once again, look, I'm still relatively early days. I think, from what I've heard, is about 30-ish hours, I guess. So, like, I'm a small dent into it. And, you know, there are characters that are seen in the key art and the trailers, etc., that I'm yet to meet. So, that kind of sets it up that I'm like, okay, cool. I imagine there is some growth within her as a character. And I hope by the end of this, I'm going to feel connected to her and want to assist her in this big bounty. Speaking of bounties, so the key sort of thing about this game particularly is it's a Star Wars story, but not in the same way that we, and not in the same way that we would see like Rogue One as an example. Like, we are sort of telling this your story in the underworld. Like, the game itself opens on Canto Bight, which those of you playing at home is the casino city in The Last Jedi. So it's an interesting idea to start the game on the world that no one really liked around The Last Jedi. Like, most people can kind of pull apart Last Jedi in a number of ways. And like, most of the points I think are kind of mute and not very good, except for the Canto Bight. I think it is very unhelpful for The Last Jedi. It tells a side story that doesn't need to be told. It's kind of ham-fisted in how it delivers, like, animal rights, etc. But here, I like how it sets it up. It's what I feel it does is, in the same way that the Clone Wars series, you know, came out after, like, you know, the prequel trilogy, and what it did is it filled in the gaps between episodes 2 and 3, so in turn makes both episode 2 and episode 3 feel more valuable because the stories have more impact. There's none of this vagueness in between, like, this, you know, we see him here and we see him there, and, you know, Anakin's so much heavily like better. He's a better Jedi. So what happened in that time, like, him and Obi-Wan compares, you know, talk stories about this and that and all these things that happened. But because we don't sort of see them, or even in a flashback, it's just kind of, we assume they've done a bunch of things. So with that same principle in mind, Canto Bight, seeing the underworld of it and sort of seeing the unpolished world or the slums that sort of lift up this casino city, which, you know, is very similar to, you know, many countries. An example that comes to my head, obviously I'm speaking this from somebody else's experience. Well, I have some water. Like Mexico, or certain parts of Mexico, like, you know, you've got these lovely resorts, but it's surrounded by slum. But those slums are what support the resort. Like, they work there, they look after it, they groundskeep, whatever. Right? So it's interesting to sort of see that dynamic here. It's showing that there is this kind of, like, you know, larger, pompous living, but underneath it, it's supported by a whole lot of crime and slums and, like, outcasts. With that in mind, like, it does sort of nicely establish a couple of different, what are they called? Like, syndicates, right? So I'm going to try and pull them from this doc so I can remember. Here we go, here are the syndicates. So in the way it's sung to me, it reminded me of Grand Theft Auto 2 on the PlayStation 1. It's where you're dealing with three different crime gangs and you as the player make the choice on how you choose to build those relationships with those three. As you know, very rock, paper, scissors in that some hate each other, some don't, but you know, like they're kind of neutral. So if you help this person, it's going to impact relationship with this person, et cetera, et cetera. So there are three, three that I've dealt with at the start. It does mention a fourth here in the doc, but when I'm not there yet, so I can't touch upon them. And they are the Crimson Dawn, which is this, a highly secretive crime syndicate that are sort of believed to have disappeared, and then they've come back, and they are sort of trying to take down a different syndicate called the Pike Syndicate. So the Pikes are an older multi-syndicate that values tradition and status. Their spice mining operation on Kessel is further complemented with coaxium, slave labor, smuggling, and black market distribution. And then the third that we've met at the time is the Hutt Cartel. So they are by extension of Jabba the Hutt and the syndicate on Tatooine, and sort of getting involved in the Outer Rim areas. So all your different Dantooine, etc., etc. So that's kind of fun. I like the idea of balancing. It hurts my brain because I end up just treating everyone, like I kind of let everyone neutral each other out. So everyone kind of sits. I never really have like one syndicate that I'm like the bestest friends with. And then in turn, the other two have to suck it. Like mostly because I never want to like miss a story beat or like miss a mission, or I feel like I've done it wrong. If I've, there's too many choices there to kind of not work with my anxiety. So I end up kind of neutralizing everyone. And even what I've done so far is, so once I've escaped from Canto Bight, gone to this new location, I did mention its name before. Where is it? In Tashara, which is a cool kind of like, I think it's a moon. And it's like, so it's kind of, it's not quite Tatooine in that it's like, it's a clearly a deserty sort of planet, but it's got like green and shrubbery. And so it's not entirely a desert planet. Like it's got a bit more oomph to it, than that. So once you're in there, you start working different jobs where you can sort of pick where your original allegiances lie. And throughout that time, you'll bump into missions where like you are given choices. They are essentially morality choices, as in if you do this, you will increase your relationship with the Crimson Dawn, however it will bring down your relationship with the Pikes, or vice versa. So you know, if you're actually like, for me, my relationship was already positive with Crimson Dawn, but it was, you know, neutral with the Hutts. I read the mission and I was like, it's probably going to be more beneficial for me if I make the choice to work with the Crimson Dawn and not screw them over just yet. So I do like that they are giving a sense of open world, right? As I mentioned, this is one of the first open world single player games. Obviously, they've got the Old Republic, which is the MMO. This gives it that open world feel and that sort of that RPG, you know, controlling of the world, controlling of the narrative. In a way that I think is interesting. I do like it. I like to see where it will go, and how that plays. So in consulting with Max about like my experience in the first 6-7 hours and compared to his, he and I made one choice, very, very different. And the path, we all ended up in the same spot, but so it's not quite like any of the Quantic Dream games, which will send you in 1,000 directions and you'll never quite get back to where you started. It does kind of end back, but how it gets there was very, very different. It was very interesting and how the one little choice changes things. So I'd hope that sort of extends itself larger in a number of ways. I think that would be very, very interesting. I'll touch upon Nyx as well. So as I mentioned, Nyx is sort of the companion that comes with KVS. And he's a great little helper in that he can be used to distract enemies, because there's a lot of stealth missions that I've experienced so far, and the stealth is a little hit and miss. However, having Nyx is very helpful, so you can just sort of distract one or bring one towards you, so then you can, you know, punch him in the guts and put him, hide him away, while his mate has no idea. You can also steal from people. So, you know, as you are an outlaw and you're sort of running around, you're scrapping, you're grabbing little loose things here and there. You can use that to trade and build up things as you play. And Nick's, you know, you can be hiding and there's something over there. You're like, hey, Nick, go get it. You run and get it and come back. I say she. I shouldn't say she. I'm not sure. Additionally, you can use it to detonate, you know, little explosives or create some, or help with some traps as you need. I did find that the controls for Nyx are a bit finicky in that, you know, if you want them to steal from someone, you must have like you, the cues will come, the visual cues will come up on the screen, but you can't like you have to look directly at the person, even though it's already like the magnet, quote unquote, of the task is already gone. Hey, this person, they can attack them or you can steal from them. So you can't like look at them in your peripherals and, you know, it does like a little blue, like a greeny blue line, also blue green colorblind. So I think it's teal that comes, that goes from you, from Nyx to the person. But yeah, you just go, oh, cool, steal. Nah, you have to add, like look at the person, almost essentially look at their belt and go steal. Otherwise, the button does nothing. Weird little thing, but it does kind of break the flow of it a little bit. But once you start adjusting and you realize, oh, that's the framework at which I need to use, sweet, fine. One of the things I will compliment this game on in my experience so far is that it really does feel like Star Wars. The world feels like Star Wars. The art design feels like Star Wars. Like the places you head to, the planets, the ships, like it all has that like 70s future feel that we saw from Star Wars. Like, you know, tube TVs and a lot of greens and a lot of like that brutalistic architecture. A lot of greys and that sort of stuff. But then you get all the, you know, well-lit hallways of the Empire and things like that. So I really enjoy that. It feels like I'm in Star Wars, which I really, really like. As someone that's kind of, you know, fallen out of love for Star Wars over the last number of years, it is nice to feel back in the world. I'm just hoping that I can connect to Kay a bit more over time and sort of go from there. In terms of some additions they've added, that they've put into the game, so you do get your little speeder bike, which is fun. So like fanging us across different locations is really cool. It does add to the grand scale of the worlds. It does feel like there's a lot of distance, and because you are kind of in these desolate planets, it feels right that there's a bunch of empty space between them. But there's always cool little things you can stop and find on the way. It reminded me a lot of the Jedi Fallen Order, Jedi Survivor, right? Because there are a lot of planets that you kind of mess about in the open world scenarios where you can go and sort of mess about with things. So it's interesting that this, you know, they mentioned this is an open world where, like, in a lot of ways, I guess in a lot of ways, like the Jedi, like Fallen Order and Survivor, They are considered what I like to call fopen worlds, is because like you are still given a direction and the world feels open, but it is also still very locked in and linear. It's kind of like here's a playpen and you can mess about in here. Don't think about going out, and you might like the story dictates that you're in this pen. Do whatever you want in this pen, but you know, you've got to progress out of it. Where here it feels like, oh, I can fuck off, I can go over to the elsewhere planet, I can do that and do that and do that. Speaking of going to other planets, you do get your ship, it's called the Trailblazer. You flog it at the start of the game, and then you sort of use that to go, you know, from the ground in its base and do a bunch of cool things. That's how you get from planet to planet. As of right now, I've not unlocked my hyperdrive, so I'm still stuck on this pond planet. But I do like the ship. I mean, like, I'm hoping there's some bigger customization, because, you know, thankfully to the version of the game that was provided to us by Ubisoft, we were given cool outfits. So I kind of went in and made Kay a bit more what I would imagine Kay would be. So it's a little bit of a mix of like Han Solo or the Scoundrel set. And there's one that's like Lando inspired. So I didn't quite use that one, but I like that one a bit.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, and then the bike you can do the same with as well. And as you explore the world, you can find some stuff. Let's talk about like the combat. So the shooting feels fine. It doesn't feel like The Division at all. At least for me, like it doesn't have the snap cover system that you get in The Division. The gunplay feels a little loose. I can't quite explain. It's not as precise as I would want it to be. And I don't know what it is. Like, so the guns themselves, like very in Star Wars fashion, they don't have like ammo or rounds or whatever. It's all done like by a heat system. So if you shoot too much, it overheats and you gotta wait, etc. That's fine. The other big part so far is stealth. There are quite a number of stealth sections that I personally have an issue with. I find them absolutely not forgiving at all, because you can be like right seconds from the objective, and then you get pushed to the very start of that encounter. And the way the maps are set out, like, it takes time. It's not a thing you can speed through. So it would be nice if there were like trip markers throughout that would create sort of checkpoints, rather than just going, here's your entire encounter. You spent 10 minutes on it and you died and you got caught. Too fucking bad. And like, I think it wouldn't surprise me if like a good 45 minutes to an hour of my playtime is just me getting frustrated at two specific sneak stealthy encounters, so much so that I'm like, I kind of am fucking wanting to put this game down at this point, because the stealth is frustrating. And then on top of that, they have the lockpick system. Now, I understand what they were going for. I don't think it worked, because it relies on audio cues and timing. So even though I am like a, you know, big old Guitar Hero player, et cetera, like if the fact that I have to like look at the screen and see the visual indicator, so that's like essentially those little round doohickeys, you know, the R2-D2 stings, in and turns around and use it to unlock doors. So what, in order to use it, you've got, there's two lights on the left hand, on the right hand side, and they beep and you've got to match the pattern. But I find that there is, because it shows on the screen, it does a audio cue on your controller, and then you have to match it. I match the audio cue from the controller, and it's always off, like because it's just off. Like the level of preciseness that apparently it needs, the slight audio delay to my controller throws me off immediately. And even visually, essentially, I have to not look. I have to not listen. I just have to like watch the light, and I go, you know, dun, 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 dun. And like, we're talking like it's just slightly like offbeat. And if you don't do it slightly offbeat, you crap it and you start it again. So aside from like, you know, I could sit here and talk about how I think there's concerns here from an accessibility standpoint, especially for those for timing, visual cues, and sort of audio processing. There is quite a lot of accessibility options in this game, so I think it's on me that I've not dived into them further to sort of work with my needs, I guess. For me, I would have a much better time with the game if I could simplify that, or if it was just more like a standard lockpick like you would get out of Skyrim or some Elder Scrolls or Fallout even. Fallout has pretty good lockpicking. That's the terminals. Yeah, lockpicking Fallout's fine. Like, that would be preferred for me. So I'm playing on the PS5. I've been playing on the performance mode. The game is still very pretty. I do have a TV that does support the variable refresh rates, etc. However, I don't tend to... some games I find that it works with the 40 frames and it kind of bounces out to the 120. Here, I was finding it was a little hitching. So I was like, I'm just going to go straight performance and sort of go from there. I've not had any major... I've had some weird lighting bugs. Once again, this is pre-release, so I'm not like super worried about it. But like a couple weird like sort of shimmering on one particular thing that was just spinny, doohickey. But yeah, I think I'll leave it there. So like, it's good. It's the first impressions of the game. I'm in this weird space, wrapping up my thoughts. I'm not connecting to Kay as a character. Nothing to do with her gender or anything like that. It's purely I'm not finding like the thing that makes her like, why is she doing this? Apart from what appears to be a sense of self-righteousness to be like, well, I'm going to show everyone, but she doesn't have the skills to back it up. And she just has this need to be strong and independent. Not showing that weakness of needing, of asking for help or whatever. Like, that's the read that I'm getting. And as a result, like, I just haven't quite, like, connected to her yet. And I'm desperate to find that because I want to see it through her. I want to see what her story is. And I want to see, like, why we're doing all these things. Pardon me. The world itself, as I mentioned, feels like Star Wars. And I love it for it. It looks like Star Wars. When I'm not in the stealth missions or trying to lockpick shit, I'm having a good time. As I said, the gunplay is a little loose, but I'm enjoying it for what it is, and it's fun just blasting things. I am also really happy that we're playing a Star Wars game that, at least as of right now, doesn't have any Jedi in it. Like, Kay doesn't have Force powers. She's not be able to like lift things and do whatever. So in the same way, I love Rogue One for its kind, for its more grounded story, or even Andor for its more grounded story within Star Wars. I really appreciate there being a lack of Jedi or a lack of Force powers or space magic, right? I find that very entertaining, just because it's a different way of seeing and exploring like the world of Star Wars. But we'll be back next week to talk more about that as I spend some more time with it, because I'm enjoying playing with it and I do want to go back, but it's been a week. Excuse me. But yes, of course, big thank you to the team over at Ubisoft Australia for providing the review code for that. We do appreciate it, especially with the early access that we received as well. A bit more time would have been rad, but even then, yeah, like just moving house during this time was not really helpful for me at all. The other thing that I've been playing this week, now this one I've been playing probably around about the same. The difference is like I've been playing Star Wars of a Nighttime, and in the morning, before I start work, I come down, like I work from home, so I'm sitting literally at this desk. I come sit down and I've been playing a game called Bar Tavern Simulator. So everybody knows how much I love simulator games, especially the likes of Gas Station Simulator, Farming Simulator, obviously, supermarkets, those sort of games, like what, Contraband, Police, those sort of ones. So when I saw this on Keymailer, which is where we did receive the code from the distributor or publisher, I like had to jump on it. So the big gimmick about this game is that you run a tavern, but it's not like a tavern in like our sense. It's tavern in like a fantasy world. Like, so it's like you've got your barrels of ale, you've got soups and meats and etc., and you have this cool little like log cabin. So it kind of has this interesting like fantasy feel You know, because people are coming in and the models are very reminiscent of WoW's like standard sort of builds, which tickled a little part of my brain as well, because in my head I'm like, you know, this little tavern in World of Warcraft, and all the adventurers are coming past and they come in, have a couple of ales, and you know, and then head on out on their adventure. Where I think Tavern Manager Simulator, yes, Tavern Manager Simulator, really excels is it is a simulator that is easy enough to jump in. So unlike a game like Farming Simulator or any of those sort of bigger ones where you are simulating to the nth degree, this is very much a more casual experience of a simulator. Very similar to like House Flipper, right? Like it's just enough real that it kind of feels like you're doing these things and it is a bit of exertion to get it done, but it's not so overly complicated that you're burdened by all the little idiosyncrasies that you have to do to get the task done. Why does my phone keep bleeping and bleeping at me? No, just things about AEW. Yeah, so I like that. You know, in terms of pouring the beers, it's as simple as just, you know, there's a little lever, a little line, sorry, measurement. Hold the button, hold your left mouse to hit the green, ticket in your Dunskies. Same goes preparing the food, like, you know, the soup. It's you get the bits, you throw it in, you put the wood in, you maintain the wood levels, and you just got to stir it until you get to the green part. You've got a time while it cooks, make sure it stays in the green. Bingo, bango, bongo. And even when you go go to the tables, it's simple as just boom, here you go, pick up the rut, pick up the used stuff, go wash it. So it's easy to get into, but as you start expanding and growing your tavern over various levels, you start including more things you can sell, the space gets larger, so suddenly more tables can be put down, so you're getting an increase of customers, an increase of orders, the size of orders increase as you start at like 2-seater tables to 4-seater tables to 6-seater tables and so on. You've got the bar, so you have individuals that come and sit at the bar. So you can get overwhelmed very, very quickly if you you've not got that system down, and once you get those sort of those things in motion, you suss out what works for you, and then you sort of find it from there. So that I'm really, really enjoying it, which is no surprise. Like when I saw it in the list of games I could grab on Keymailer, I was like, yes, please, because I knew it was going to like tick my boxes, and it absolutely does. So much so that after this, in fact, I'm probably going to go play it. I could go play Star Wars, but it is a little late in the night, and I want to just like chill out and like sell people ale. I've only had one little hiccup where the game wouldn't register that I wanted to pick up the empty flagons on the bar, and just kept reading it as dirty, and I was like, oh, can I pick it up? And like, there was nothing there to pick up. And then I just closed the game, opened it back up, and it was fine. So it runs great, plays great, looks great, has that good sort of like, yeah, WoW feel. I'm enjoying expanding it all and you know, being like, oh shit, three beers, two sausages and a steak. And now I've got like two trays, I'm running out and going, hi, how you going? Talking to people, getting the money. Like it is fun. Like it ticks that part of my ADHD, well, my autism and ADHD brain that makes me like these repetitive tasks. And, you know, sort of the sense of accomplishment of like, you know, it's essentially carrot on the stick, right? I'm like, it's a couple more. And I keep going, and then I can prepare some beers, I'll prepare this. Like it's weirdly more organized than my entire fucking life. So big shout out to the team for that one. I do genuinely love Tavern Manager Simulator. I absolutely dig it. Outside of that, I think that's really it. Oh, excuse me. Because with Outlaws coming, I intentionally kept myself at a distance from other games, so I didn't like cross my paths or whatever. So yeah, let's see what else we got. Damn, big one. All right, let's go. This is again the section we call Inform the Players. We tell you about what happened this week in PlayStation. Now, turns out like talking just to no one is very exhausting on the mouth hole. All right, so let's get into some Sony news. Falling Stars, Max has named this one. Sony is sending out emails to PS Plus subscribers notifying them that the terms of service for the rewards program PS Stars is being updated, which probably means it's actually online. Well, which is good because it's been online for us here in Australia for a little while. Starting from the 24th of October, you must accept these updated terms to continue to be a PS Stars member, and from then onwards, those precious points will expire 13 months from the date they hit your account. Worse, from the 1st of March 2025, points can no longer be earned from subscription payments, initial or recurring. That's quite bleak because PS Plus isn't as cheap as it once was, and if you are a subscriber, this recurring charge was at least a way to reinvest back into the ecosystem, which I agree, because I have Deluxe, which is our version of premium here in Australia, because we don't have PS3 streaming, so we don't have the full-blown one. And mine renews in August, and I always forget, and then I get boned, like $200 dues that just come out of my account. Especially right now when I'm in the middle of moving house and I'm closed up moving house, but I don't have a lot of money because moving's expensive apparently. So that's a bit of a bummer, but I did get the extra points out of it, so that's good. But the reward options have seemed to have decreased. I think it's Delicious Last Course from Cuphead, Stellar Blade, and Dredge. Like Bellatro is not there anymore, which is annoying because that's what I wanted. Excuse me. So that's a bum, but yeah, cool. Annoyingly, you'll also need to manually log into PlayStation Stars via the PlayStation app or online and review the terms of service, or you will be considered, quote-unquote, a cancelled member. Sony, as ever, remains savage, coldly offering its subscribers a choice. Quote, PlayStation Stars members must accept the updated terms of service to remain a PlayStation Stars member or decline and cancel your PlayStation Stars membership. If you do not make any selection, you will be considered a cancel member until you accept the updated terms of service. Now that I understand, like that's how terms of services work. We are all engaged in various sorts of online licenses, etc. And, you know, we must meet their terms of service, you know, very similar to the long running joke of like, how often do we actually read any of the things in the Apple's terms of conditions and services and whatever? No one. I quite like the digital little trinkets. So for me, I'm going to happily accept this. The expiring of the points is inconvenient because I'm yet to actually cash in any of my points. That's a lie. In anything big, there was a couple little trinkets. You'd pay like 500 coins, for like a god, you know, Kratos head. And I was like, boom, cause it's Kratos. I had to buy it in a heartbeat. So having the points expire 12 months after, you know, after they're collected, it's a bit frustrating because most things are done on a month-to-month basis. So, you know, you may end up like, you're not really able to accrue them in the way that you could. But as I mentioned, I've not accrued them in like what? I've not spent them in like a year or as long as since PS Plus has come out. So as a result, I have a large pool of coins, and if you know, just bank them, next thing you know, you've got hundreds of potential dollars of credit. So it makes sense why they're forcing you to sort of do them, use them, but yeah, it's part of the deal. Global expansion. So Sony has announced the MENA Hero Project. Sure. The next step in its game development support program. The Hero Project initiative is a way for the company to seek out and support new video game talent in underrepresented regions. Now, it's extending that to the Middle East and North Africa, hence MENA. Included countries are Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Iraq, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Jordan, Egypt, Morocco, and Tunisia. Developers and studios in these parts of the world may be eligible for Sony support, which can involve mentorship, traineeship, and investment. Submissions for Mena Hero Project are now open. I genuinely love their Hero Project. It's obviously, we had Black Myth Wukong come through there, and that came out this week, so that's pretty exciting. You know, it's nice to see what other parts of the world are making. What are they working on? What are they delivering? Because, you know, most of the time we see everything through the Western viewpoint. And it's nice to experience what other cultures do and use, and how they see the world and how they experience the world. And especially with games being the interactive medium that they are, we get to sort of live in their world in a cool little different way, which is intriguing. I'm a big supporter of this. And once again, we're heading into areas that normally wouldn't be represented, especially in that Middle East, African region. There's not a lot of strong game support. And I know that PlayStation did something similar here in Australia. I forget what it was called, but it was done through universities where they essentially were able to provide dev kits to particular universities that were studying game design. I forget what it was called. I think it was PlayStation First, I think it was called. And the idea was, you know, connecting to these people first and then helping them. It essentially connects them to the ecosystem. It's a whole big thing. It's a really cool idea. All right, let's keep going. All the space. Western Digital has added a brand new SSD to its officially licensed lineup, this time offering PS5 owners the chance to upgrade their system with a whopping 8 terabytes of extra storage, the most that the PS5 console will allow. The 8TB WD Black SN850P NVMe SSD is the latest product in the company's partnership with Sony, offering space to store, quote, up to 200 games, end quote, or one Call of Duty and one Destiny 2. Coming with an optimized heatsink, the WD Black brand has been top choice from the very beginning when it comes to PS5 SSDs. So it's, you know, we can be confident that it's a top quality choice. There does come with some catches though. The SSD itself is $999, which is redonkulous. That's like literally more than the console, which is crazy. Now, as someone like myself who jumps from game to game because of just me and my utter, I tend to have a lot of games stored on my console at any given time because there's a lot of games my kid likes to play, and he's a little utter as well, so he'll jump between them, but I can never delete them because sometimes you want to go back, and I've been caught out for times that I've removed something and then going, and then having to reinstall, which is not, I have good internet, so I'm not too bad in that sense, but it is just a bit frustrating for a moment. There is no reason that you would ever need 8TB on your console. I'm sorry. I can't see why, unless you have like a huge honking family. But even then, with shared accounts, you need to install something once. But, sorry for all the yawning, everyone. It is quite late. It's a cool thing to have. Let's talk about, this was something that came out of Gamescom, and I'll talk about Gamescom a bit more specifically in just a moment, but let's dive into this. So Secret Level. Secret Level is an upcoming Amazon Prime anthology show, executive produced by Deadpool's Tim Miller, will feature episodes dedicated to PlayStation and Hero Shooter Concord. There'll be 15 episodes in all, each inspired by a different game. Here is a list of some of the wrecking of the game of franchises that have been represented. Armored Core, Concord, Crossfire, Dungeons and Dragons, Exodus, Honors of Kings, Mega Man, New World, Pac-Man, PlayStation, a bit vague, but there's like, you know, Kratos, etc. Sifu, Spelunky, The Outer Worlds, Unreal Tournament, and Warhammer 40K. Quote, Secret Level weaves a tapestry of iconic games across multiple mediums to tell a series of unique and captivating stories, end quote, explained Vernon Sanders, the head of television at Amazon MGM Studios. Quote, created and led by Tim Miller, Blur Studio and supervising director Dave Wilson, each episode will take our global Prime Video customers on a brand new journey with breathtaking animation and imaginative storytelling, end quote. So when I did watch Gamescom, you know, Jeff Keighley's One Night Doohickey, it's actually really good this year. Like it felt so good, so much better. This was really, really cool. So a couple of things that stood out for me, I'm like, is that Sifu? And then I'm like, holy shit, is that Kratos? And then like, holy shit, is that Mega Man? Like, I love where they're going with this. It's a great, interesting way to tell additional stories or flesh out some stories on the presumption that they are kind of self. With an anthology, these are self-contained stories. They don't all connect to each other. Like, it's just this episode's it. Think like a show on Netflix. Very similar. Can't even say similar to American Horror Story, because each season's different. Each episode is connected to the thing. What was it? What was it called? I don't know. There was the kind of like Twilight Zone, but it wasn't. So yeah, I'm intrigued to see what they deliver here. That, as in, is it a self-contained story within the world of Secret Level? Is it showing more story? Like, is this Kratos episode of this gonna like fill in some extra story and make me really happy, my Kratos love and heart? Having Concord involved in it is very, very clever, on the idea that Concord is. Its big selling point is that it has these weekly, you know, cinematics that sort of expand on the characters in the story. Oh, I have a code for that too, by the way. Haven't played it too much. Obviously played a lot in the beta. And then this week. Oh my God. So sorry, guys. It's a whole thing. So this doesn't come out until, what is it, December 9? So it's an interesting time to drop. I hope that it is a weekly release, especially over that Christmas window. I think it's a really fun idea, because it would be a good series to watch over your winter break or summer break, depending on where you are in the world. But what I love about this as well is I think this is demonstrating the fever dream energy that has come out of that has come out of like Fortnite, right? In that, you know, all these hodgepodge of just different things coming together. So brands are now, and franchise are now, more open to having conversations that can involve cross, you know, genre, cross platform, cross franchise. You know, the idea of a show that had any of the companies that we've listed, any of the franchises we've listed. So, like, this is a good sign of the future. And to see that PlayStation are heavily involved in this is awesome. Not to be that guy, but there is no Xbox on the list. Because I guess the only thing they've really, like, you know, franchise that they have is Halo. And they did that series and no one really dug it. Also, I watched, like, Twisted Metal or Gran Turismo. So, I can't not entirely, you know, there's things I could shit on for PlayStation, but I haven't yet. So I'm intrigued, very intrigued. The Warhammer 40K one, the clips that like the clips they use in the Secret Level trailer, mint, looks fantastic. Love that, big love of that. Before we jump into Gamescom, though, let's talk about TGS. So Tokyo Game Show. So Sony has announced some of its plans for the Tokyo Game Show 2024, and so far it's more or less what you'd expect. PlayStation will present at the Japanese Gaming Expo, which takes place between the 26th and 29th of September. And it could be a treat. Confirming its initial plans over on the Japanese PS blog, Sony has announced two games by the time that will be two games will be playable at its booth. First up is Astrobot, which drops next week, and will have been released by the time Tokyo Game Show rolls around. Pardon me. So attendees will get to sample the 3D platformer, but the cherry on top is the presence of a real life gacha machine in the style seen in the Astro video game. People can use this gacha machine to win themselves one of four Astrobot t-shirts. Oh, that's rule. That's really fucking cool. Oh, I like that a lot. Damn. The second game PlayStation is hosting is Monster Hunter Wilds. Of course, the Monster Hunter series has always been huge in Japan. And the upcoming entry will be playable at Sony's booth as well as Capcom's. So those who play the demo at Sony's booth will earn themselves a promotional Monster Hunter Worlds keychain. So one of the things people would talk about, like, oh, maybe we'll see PS5 Pro at Tokyo Game Show. But the timing still matches up with them wanting to drop it in like October or November, probably November. It's the best place to announce it. But of course, they're not going to announce it now to say that it's coming, because we know with them a month between now and then. Excuse me. They want to ensure that people are buying PS5s up until the last moment, because you know they assumably those prices will drop as the PS5 Pro gets announced. I want to mess with that gacha machine. I would love a shirt. Monster Hunter Worlds, meh. I'll deal with it later. I'll play with it later. But Astrobot, God, I am so unimaginably keen for that. All right, so we're just going to rip through a bunch of these things. So this is Gamescom announcements. So Gamescom was last week. As I mentioned, it was Jeff Keighley's One Night Stand. That's not what it's called. One Night Live. One Night Only. One Night Live. Whatever it is. I'm going to call it Jeff Keighley's One Night Stand. It's just him banging everyone for one night and then buggering off for a while. So let's go through some of the announcements, and these are in no particular order. Borderlands 4. It announced that it's coming to PS5 in 2025. So the first things I identified with this trailer is it looks to not be doing the same cel-shaded style that we had seen in 1, 2, 3, sequel, Telltale, etc. So I do wonder where they're going into that more realistic style. It would make sense to me because I think the cel-shaded look is a little outdated at the moment. And with the way the games look now, I think it would be kind of fun. It was interesting that this dropped, just so close to the release of the Borderlands movie, and it's not very good reception. So this news kind of nicely buried the movie. If that's what they're hoping for, I don't know, but it is what happened. Will I be playing this? Hell yes, I'll be playing this. It did make me laugh because when I went to the Borderlands premiere party, was it 2 weeks ago? I was chatting with the 2K rep, and she's like, "Hey, keep an eye out on Gamescom, all right? Keep an eye out." I was like, "Sure, why not?" I just assumed some 2K stuff's happening, so that's huge. That was one. The other big 2K thing was a Mafia: The Old Country. So this is coming to PS5. It doesn't have a real window yet, but it is essentially Mafia 4. So Hangar 13 are returning to bring Mafia: The Old Country. So it is set in Sicily, like at the beginnings of the Mafia time. So it's the establishment of organized crime. That I think is really going to be really, really fun. So I thoroughly enjoyed the remastered versions of 1 and 2. I enjoyed 1 a lot more. I really quite liked its purposely, linear narrative, where I felt some of the open worlds of 2 kind of lacked something because the world felt quite empty for what it was. Mafia 3 I really enjoyed. I never finished it, but I liked the setting. Excuse me. God damn it, Ryan. Should have had Ritalin, but I didn't. Yes. So, Mafia 3 I never finished. I did really like what I had played. It's just one of the things. It's just a game that got away from me, and I would love to go back to it one day. So, Mafia: The Old Country, big, big old win from me. Goat Simulator is being remastered, and it's coming this year to PS5. Sure, why not? Reanimal. Is a horror game from the makers of Little Nightmares, and by God, does this game look like Little Nightmares. It looks sick. I want to play the shit out of it so bad. It looks really, really cool. So the team leaked released a photo about a week or so before Gamescom of like a dark shadowy room with like a pig with his like guts hanging out at the bottom. Very reminiscent of Little Nightmares, kind of ramped up in that gore a little bit more. This looks to be very similar, as in two little characters, and same way that Little Nightmares 2 had the two characters, and this looks to be sort of very similarly veined, which I don't have a problem with. I think that's great. Infinity Nikki has a new trailer. Sure. Civ 7. So Civilization 7 has been confirmed for February release date on both PS4 and PS5. I'm super keen for this, but not as keen as Max. Max has played Civ for quite a long time, so he's very, very excited. I myself am like, I love this, you know, the SimCity sort of like those sort of like City Skyline sort of feel, Age of Empires, the RTS sort of stuff. But I know Civ isn't really an RTS, it's all turn based, and it looks kind of fun to sort of do that large scale, you know. So I'm really keen to like dip my toes in and give that a big old smash in Civ 7. Monster Hunter Wilds, they showcased a new trailer and mentioned that it's coming to PS5 in 2025. I didn't really enjoy Monster Hunter Worlds. I enjoyed it to a point, and I think I just wasn't in the right space at the time to play it. But I also don't think that style of game is for me. So I'm hoping that whenever they do release the MMOE sort of feeling thing for Horizon, like maybe that will help explain it to me and make me resonate with it. You'll find out. I'm so sorry about the yawning, guys. I'm really sorry. Here's a big one, though. Xbox's Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. So, coming out of Machine Games, the team behind Wolfenstein, the New Blood, the Old Blood, New Colossus, Young Blood, they're back with Indiana Jones, first person Indiana Jones. They gave away the release date for Xbox. And they did essentially one more thing and announced that coming spring, US spring 2025, is coming on PlayStation 5. So that is exciting. A game that was kind of meant to be a big exclusive has got essentially a 3-month exclusivity window before it comes across. Pardon me. In the defense of Xbox for this one, a lot of people are calling out the interview where Phil Spencer's had, and he mentioned when he was asked about the four games that were coming. They were very clear on the questioning. The four games, what are the four games coming? And he said those four, essentially, they're not Starfield, it's not Indiana Jones. So he correctly said those four games were not either, it was not Starfield or Indiana Jones. So he's not lying in his expression that from what he said then compared to what he said now. Do I think that behind the scenes of Xbox has changed drastically since then? Oh, yeah. I do agree with a point that I heard in another podcast where they talked about they're pretty confident that Xbox doesn't run Xbox anymore. Like Phil Spencer and whomever, like they don't run it. Like since the ABK purchase, they have been so heavily monitored and scrutinized that I think a lot of the things that they would have done previously are kind of not happening. And I think one of those things is Indiana Jones going multi-plat. Because I think they're like, hey, no one's buying Xboxes. We're not going to get the money we should get for this from Game Pass subscriptions alone. We need additional revenue. We've seen the success of like Sea of Thieves. You know, people paying $50 for this game that came out 9 years ago. So let's give them 3 months, and then we can charge everyone $120 Australian or $70 US, and we will get a stack of coin, and that will appease, Lucasfilm, Disney, whomever. Fatal Fury, City of the Wolves, has confirmed 17 characters and it's coming to PS4, PS5 in April of next year. Unknown Nine Awakenings coming October PS5. Marvel Rivals, they've mentioned that the upcoming future heroes will be free. I know Max has been playing in the closed beta. I've been really enjoying it, which is exciting. Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 had itself a new gameplay trailer. Cool. I didn't play the first one. It did intrigue me, but it was like super, super hard RPG in terms of like super real. It was like, Sniper Elite Resistance. The second I saw the beginning of that trailer and like that slow zoom, I'm like, yeah, I bet someone's getting shot through that. Thoroughly enjoyed Sniper Elite. I played a lot of Sniper Elite 4, and it's mostly just me shooting faces out in ball bags. It was awesome. Street Fighter 6, classic character Terry Bogard joins the fight. It's pretty exciting. Diablo 4 shows off mercenaries in some upcoming DLC. Lost Records, Bloom and Rage. Dying Like the Beast. So this is interesting. So it's a standalone game that's kind of like very similar to, you know, Infamous First Light or what was the Far Cry one? Blood Dragon. It's got like 18 hours of gameplay in it. I did hear something like that's a weirdly specific amount. I'm like, but the controversy that Techland faced when they were like 500 hours of gameplay in fucking Dying Light 2, and everyone's like, that's not good. So I think they, you know, there was a little bit of realization that they've kind of amplified the numbers at the time. So I think they chose to be a bit more like specifically accurate. So credit to them. What else we got? Floatopia, which is like an Animal Crossing looking game. Directive 8020. So this is the next from Supermassive as part of the Dark Pictures anthology. This is the beginning of season 2. Season 1 was 4. Season 2 is this one. And then I'm sure it'll be 3 more. A couple of things to note here. So this one's set in space. Looks very cool. It's very reminiscent of The Thing, apparently. Having only really enjoyed like one, maybe two of the season 1 of the Dark Pictures, mostly a little Hope, which was awesome, and the Devil in Me was pretty good, where Man of Medan and House of Ashes were a little bit poo. Things to note, as I mentioned, this is being essentially self-published, self-distributed by Supermassive, where previously they teamed up with Bandai Namco to release that across the world. So I'm unsure whether the deal had collapsed or they've chosen like it was just one season deal. But, you know, Supermassive are known to jump around, obviously with The Quarry, originally on the Ouya, went to 2K, as mentioned, Bandai, Until Dawn with PlayStation. They've been a little bit everywhere, so that in itself is not. But, you know, hopefully it's a good return on investment for them to do it themselves. Dune Awakening. So the Dune MMO got itself in a little trailer. So it's coming to PC in early 2025, but also coming to PS5 at a later date. Looks sick. As my partner is a huge fan of Dune. I saw the Dune. I like saying it dumb on purpose. Dune. And having seen both the movies now and like really enjoying him, I'm like, okay, I might have to step foot into this MMO. I think I kind of want to be, from Arrakis or wherever. Space Marine 2 got itself a new trailer with a September 9 release date. Sweet. Keen as poo to play that. That'd be awesome. Call of Duty Black Ops 6 with a gameplay trailer. 25th of October for the release. Ark Riders, which is an extraction shooter coming 2025 PS5. The first Berserker Kazan. I don't remember that one at all. New gameplay trailer coming early 2025. King of Meat, hot gameplay trailer coming next year. Revenge of the Savage Planet, sequel to Journey to the Savage Planet, coming 2025. Predecessor, PS5 MOBA, is free to play right now. And finally, a co-op trailer for Little Nightmares 3, and that game is coming next year. And that one's being done by Supermassive as well. So it was interesting to sort of see both Little Nightmares 3 and Reanimal, you know, with the Reanimal being from the makers of Little Nightmares, sort of see two similarly styled games, but also it's a good call for those that were like wanting Little Nightmares 3, but may not have been aware the studio, you know, the studio changed, for them to go, oh, cool, well, maybe I'll go check that out, because that in itself feels like a sort of spiritual successor to Little Nightmares. So as I mentioned, Gamescom was really, really good this year. Normally, I'm a little bit disenfranchised, and I do tend to keep myself at a distance for, you know, many of these things, just because I'm like, PlayStation never really there, so it's not worth me really covering. And I just don't have the optimism that many have for these things. Normally, I'm like, underwhelming. But to sit down and actually watch it and enjoy it and take it in, I was like, okay, no, this is really, really, really good. Really good. Quick bits. Black Myth Wukong has sold 10 million copies in 3 days on both PS5 and PC. Holy shit, that game is like utterly just blowing the hell up. Now, understandably, with it being a Chinese game, I imagine there's a lot of interest from the Chinese country specifically. And I think they're responsible for like multiple millions of them, just themselves. Kojima is set to host a Death Stranding 2 special stage doohickey at the Tokyo Game Show. Hells yeah. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Over 12 million players have pre-registered to play PS5 fashion RPG Infinity Nikki. Weebs. And finally, Concord on PC, apparently not doing so well. Allegedly peaking at 697 concurrent players. Pardon me. Concord is in a weird spot. It came out at a rough time. The beta didn't really give it the love that it needed and or should have had. We can't see the numbers for PlayStation right now, but if this is correct, PC's not having a good time. As I mentioned, we were provided a review code, so I have it on both PC and PlayStation 5. Pardon me, I personally... I'm enjoying playing it on the PC. I don't know why. Because I've been playing a lot of PC lately. Well, obviously, Elder Scrolls Online, which I also haven't really played this week. Damn. And it just seems to... It seems to work with the first-person-ness. But yeah, like, I do worry about the future of Concord. There's a lot of ambition. As it came out this week, the Fire Sprite... have put like, what, 8 years? Or was it Firewalk. Firewalk have put, you know, 8 years in building this. So that's pretty huge, pretty massive. Also, that's a long-ass time to be spent on a games-as-a-service game, because in 8 years, how games-as-a-service has changed is insane. Which either leads me to think they wanted to make something different, and then it pivoted over time to what it is now, and that could explain why it's a little weird. But with it being essentially a full release title, that, you know, the barrier to entry is a lot higher, so I think people were waiting to sort of see what it is, and when they're battling in a an economy of attention, an economy of time. People are not willing to step away from their free ones to do it, even if it's, you know, brand, which Concord's good. No upcoming games this week because Max didn't give it to me. I'm too lazy to go look for it right now because it's getting pretty late. But yeah, there you go. You've just got me talking at you for just over an hour and 10. So... hope you enjoyed it. I hope you like it. It's been a while since I've done one by myself, and my skill set really is bouncing off other people, and I feel like I kind of just went on tangents and said a bunch of nonsense, and maybe I'll come back. Hopefully it came back around and was something of entertaining. But Max will be back next week. We'll be talking about... Is Astro Bot next week? Let's see. No. Ooh. When does AstroBot come out? Let me do this. AstroBot. AstroBot is releasing on the 6th of September. So, it'll come out next Friday. So, we'll have some... Tay's doing... it's next week. Dang it. So, we'll have more to say about AstroBot next week. As in the week. Because this coming episode will be... Yeah, not yet. Keen for that. Should be fantastic. We'll catch up on this. Max's thoughts on Star Wars Outlaws. Expand on that. Hopefully, I'll spend some more time with it as well. We're going to have a bigger, larger review. But, even with just one dude talking at you, thank you so much for taking the time and listening to me just ramble at you for, as I said, over an hour. I really appreciate it. As I mentioned in most episodes, time is the most precious commodity that we have. And thank you for choosing to spend that time with me and listening to both me and Max and myself and the things that we do here at For the Players. If you've made it this long, you probably enjoy the things that I have to say. So if you are around PAX Australia on Saturday at 4:30 p.m. at the Kookaburra Theatre, I am running a panel with a colleague of mine, Doom Cutie. We are doing the console clash, green versus blue. We are doing a debate of PlayStation versus Xbox. I'm representing Team PlayStation, shock. And she, Doom Cutie, will be representing Team Xbox. However, the fun part is everything is reversed. So the people that are working for Team Xbox are actually all Xbox creators, or people that work for arguing for PlayStation, Xbox or PlayStation creator. It's flipped on its head. It's fun. It's going to be silly. Just demonstrate the console wars are fucking stupid. But anyways, let's wrap this bad boy up. So as Max would say, this conversation happens every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on your podcast services, 9 a.m. on those YouTubes. If you want to join join future conversations, you can be sure to head up our social medias. That's Facebook, Discord, Instagram, and X. All those links can be down in the description below. If you want to join us as the conversation happens, we do record this normally on twitch.tv/popcultures on a Sunday night, where you can jump in the chat and become part of the show. If you want to support the show, you can tell your friends, tell your family about this PlayStation Pod. And if you are listening to us on podcast service, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and a written review. If you watch us on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, or comment below, because I endeavor to answer every single comment. And if you want to support us financially, you can at patreon.com/popcultures, as well as our merchandise store, popculture.com/shop. We can buy shirts and other sort of shit with our logos on it. But until next week, I'm Ryan Betson. And that was For the Players.